The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, October 31st, the Parent Under the Influence edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm an editor and writer at Slate. I'm the author of the book How to Be a Family, and I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 14, and Harper, who's 12.
My name is Jamila Lemieux. I'm a writer and a contributor to Care and Feeding, Slate's weekly parenting column. I am the mother of Naima, who is 6, and we're based in Inglewood, California.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. I'm a journalist and podcaster in New Hampshire, and I am mom to Henry, who is 18, Teddy, who is 16 and a half, and my stepdaughter, Lily, who is 19.
And this is Rebecca's final show as a regular host. She has assured us she will be rejoining us from time to time over the future, but she is
If
we'll have you, as she is leaving us for the glorious grind of the daily New Hampshire news cycle. Rebecca, I'm just going to ask you a quick question to commemorate your years on this show and the many, many, many wonderful episodes that you put in. What was the worst ever fail that you presented on the show? Just the stupidest, dumbest, most terrible fail that you ever pulled off.
Well, it's more of a compilation of a thematic fail, because listening back to the show sometimes, I realize, this sounds familiar. I think I've said this before, and it usually is, oh shit, I didn't know this thing was happening in my son, usually Teddy, because he's a younger one in school and has more like stuff I need to know. Like, I didn't know that meeting was happening, so I just blew it off. I didn't know this concert was happening, so I almost missed it. I didn't know this like regular thing that all these other parents seem to know is happening, so I had to make some sort of last minute scramble just to like do the bare minimum. So that's sort of the theme for me. I always feel like out of the loop, like I'm not the adult in the room when it comes to parenting my kids and just knowing what the hell is going on. So that would be the one I think I'd point to the most.
That's very in the spirit of Mom and Dad Are Fighting, a show that launched with one of our original co-hosts, Allison Benedict, confessing that she never opens her mail. And therefore, as a result, she often finds out about stuff like parent-teacher conferences 3 months after they happen.
That's right.
I will note, Rebecca, that several Facebook commenters noted that your triumph from a couple weeks ago, where you discovered that past you had assembled all the stuff you needed for
yes.
financial aid,
yes,
had in fact been presaged 1 year before.
That's
by
right.
actual past you claiming as a triumph on the show that you did that thing, then completely forgot it.
Yep.
Then found it and it was a triumph again.
I am so stupid. I mean, there's literal documented audio evidence on the internet of exactly how out of the loop and stupid I am and all the dumb tricks I have to do just to make it through my very basic life. It's really, really amazing. And it was funny because even as I was saying that, I was like, wow, this really feels familiar coming out of my mouth. I don't know why. It just feels familiar. And yes, it was in fact because I had a year before said proudly, oh, I'm putting all this stuff in a place I can find it in a year. That is how stupid I am. Now you all know the cat is out of the bag.
Or you're just like smart enough to like create that audio trail as part of the extensive kinds of breadcrumbing you need to do in order to find your way back to these things.
Correct. Correct.
We will miss you, Rebecca. We'll be very happy to have you back any old time, but hopefully the removal of this show from your weekly life will make it a little more likely that you won't forget Teddy's next like confirmation or something.
Yeah, I already forgot about signing up for parent-teacher conference. The boat has sailed on that one. I just saw a note like, thank you to everyone who has signed up for parent-teacher conference. Like, shit. Already did it again. Yeah, good times.
Today on the show, we've got a question about imbibing while parenting, plus a question about a grandpa who has advancing Alzheimer's. How do you talk to your kids about that? Plus triumphs and fails and recommendations. And of course, happy Halloween, everyone. What are your kids dressing up as for Halloween this year? Harper is going as Megan Rapinoe, and Lyra is dressing as Kiki from Kiki's Delivery Service. Jamila, what about you?
No.
Well, I have to say, we usually go not all the way out, but I usually do homemade costumes. And so this is the first time in years that I'm not doing one. So I feel a little bit sad about it, but it just felt like too much to pull together this year. And then my daughter came home with somewhat unclear instructions. I feel like any official communication needs to be either done electronically or on paper. You cannot tell kids things. They're not going to deliver the message accurately. So she told me that they were supposed to dress up at school as community helpers, like somebody that does something in the community that they would like to do. And I was like, so like a doctor or a nurse? And she said, yeah, or, you know, a scientist. And I said, okay, well, do you want to be like Katherine Johnson from Hidden Figures, because she was a scientist and she got all excited about that. And so I get her a vintage looking dress on eBay and some little stuff to go with it. And then the clarification I get from the teacher is that they were doing college or career day. So they could either come in college gear or as the career that they want to be someday. So even though I consider just like abandoning ship and starting over, I don't feel like it. And so Naima is going as what she wants to be in the future, which is a woman from the 60s who worked at NASA. And it is what it is. The costume is very cute. And that's that. And so after school, she's going to be one of the Descendants, Uma. I don't know if you are any of your kids into Descendants. It's
my Harper just was at the tail end of the right age to watch the first Descendants movie. So I have a vague knowledge of that property.
We are all in on the Descendants. There have been three installments at this point. They're not going to make another one because one of the lead actors, Camera Boys, passed away. But it's about the descendants of Disney princesses and villains as teenagers doing all types of crazy teenager stuff. And it's very cute. And omnipresent in our household.
Rebecca, what about you guys? Are your kids dressing up? Are they too old?
There is like a grand tradition of like nice teenager trick-or-treating in my town. So Teddy usually dresses up. He's probably going to dress up again and probably repeat. He told me his costume from last year, which I think that he didn't do it on purpose, but he basically dresses up as Ponyboy from The Outsiders. This is like vintage leather jacket, white t-shirt, slicks his hair back, and his hair is so big now that he can make like a kick-ass pompadour. So,
he dresses as what he wants to grow up to be, a boy
greaser
in the 60s.
An S.E. Hinton boy in the 60s.
Right. Beautiful.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
All right. Now, let's do some triumphs or fails. I would love to start today. My continuing fail is that I have continued to fail to get World Series tickets. As it turned out, the Nationals lost every single home game in just terrible fashion. So in a way, it was like a gift I gave my daughter not to take her to the World Series. But this week, I have a actual triumph. So I don't know if you two or if our listeners heard anything about this, but I had a book come out this fall.
No, hadn't heard it.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I've been all over the place promoting it, but the publicity tour is now done. It's officially over. I'm totally officially sick of myself. But I've been thinking back on this experience a little bit, and especially in the way that I've talked to the kids about it. And they participated in a few events and were a little bit involved. They recorded a podcast about it for Slate. But in general, I've been a little bit leery of sharing too much response to the book with the kids. Like, it's already weird enough that this thing exists, but the idea of like people reading it and responding to it and then them having to like wrestle with that seems hard. Like, they definitely don't need to hear the bad reviews. Like the person on Goodreads who said, "Dan is so much fun as a podcaster, but as a parenting writer, yawn." Thanks for that, devoted listener. But
I'm sorry, am I laughing too much?
No, it's fine. But also, I don't even really want to share like the good ones. That just seems weird as well. But on the Slate Parenting Facebook page the other day, a wonderful parenting locus of information and advice, someone posted something that I did decide to read to Lyra. It was a listener named Jessica, and she wrote, "I listened to the audiobook a couple weeks ago. I love Lyra. She is my hero. She's going to lead an amazing life. I still think about her a lot, how she didn't have a choice but went along with her family. When I don't feel like doing some adulting thing, I think of Lyra and pretend Dan is making me do the thing." So I read that to her. It can be hard to break through Lyra's, like, teenager carapace. But when I read this to her, she, like, blushed with joy, and she stammered out just how totally delighted she was by that comment. And then a few more times over the next, like, 10 or 15 minutes, I would just see her just, like, think of it again and grin ear to ear. And I just almost never see that kind of, like, unabashed delight out of her. She's, you know, 14. So anyways, I'm saying that for now, reading this Facebook post to her, and also, you know, like, having the experience and writing the book and all that, that felt like a triumph. It felt like the ending triumph of this whole saga. And it felt really great.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. I once had my kids read a supercut of all of the worst reviews of my podcast on my podcast. They really liked it. They loved the assignment. Like, they put together the montage themselves with music and stuff. They loved it. And they loved saying all the horrible things about me that people had written in. They found that super fun. So maybe someday your kids could do the same.
Why did we not recruit your kids to read everything that people posted about you on Facebook this week vis-a-vis Halloween costumes?
Oh, they can and should. It would be very funny.
All right, Rebecca, triumph or fail?
I could just say fail for posting something on the Facebook group that turned into a fucking disaster. I didn't think was going to be so complicated. But anyway, I mean, honestly, though, we still do get so many of the same questions about should my kid wear X costume for Halloween. And the point I was trying to make, and I will make it again, is that it should not be that complicated. If you feel like you have to dig and find a million articles that explain why it's okay for your kid to wear a certain costume, then why don't you just err on the side of saying no and picking something else? It's actually not that complicated. Anyway, but to be a little bit more big picture and nostalgic, I just want to say my triumph is answering an email from former Slate person Steve Lickteig back in early 2017 asking me if I wanted to guest host on Mom and Dad Are Fighting and saying yes, which I was not going to do. My kids actually talked me into saying, sure, you should totally do that. You are judgy.
Really?
And you love giving unsolicited advice. That sounds like you should try it. I'm so happy that I did, because the last almost 3 years has been so rewarding being part of this crew and part of this team. And I have just learned a ton, you know, that I am not the same as other parents and that other parents do it differently than I do. And it all works out for the most part. We are all doing the best we can. And it's just been really rewarding and wonderful. And, you know, getting to know the two of you and getting to know Gabe and Carbell and like having these conversations weekly. It's just a big triumph professionally and personally for me that I took the chance of saying, yes, I could perhaps give advice on a podcast. So thanks to everyone at Slate for letting me try. And a triumph to me for saying yes that time back in the day.
For listening to your kids just this once.
Exactly, this one time.
Yeah. Great triumph. Well, it's been a triumph for us, obviously, as well. So thank you.
Yes, thank you, Rebecca. We will miss you.
Jamila, what about you? Triumph or fail?
So I have an accidental triumph. Last night at dinner, I looked at my phone and I pretended that I'd gotten a message. And I said, oh, Naima, looks like I got a message from someone at school. Is there something that went on today that I should know about? And it was like, it seemed obvious that I was kidding, but like her face changed. And I saw that like clearly something had happened at school. And so instead of simply saying, well, there was no text message, but is there something you want to tell me? I just continued to pretend that there was a message that I had. And I looked at my phone and I said, okay, Naima, who would be sending me a message like this? And she said, oh, I said, Naima, I already know what happened.
Wow,
and she spills her guts. And it turns out that she's been having some issues with her teacher.
Hmm.
Yeah, I tripped and fell and landed on an issue. And we ended up having a really, what I think was a pretty productive conversation about it. And, you know, I let her know that her parents have her back when she's made a mistake and when she hasn't. And that we can advocate on her behalf if need be and will, but that we really need to be, you know, made abreast of what's going on at school. And if she's had an uncomfortable moment with the teacher, you know, that doesn't mean that the teacher's a bad person or that she's a bad student. And it's okay. And sometimes you need to talk through those things and you may not feel comfortable doing that on your own or, you know, saying, hey, you know, Miss So-and-so, I didn't like the way that you spoke to me or feel a little uncomfortable about some of the language that you're using in class, et cetera. And that's where, you know, mom and dad step in. So were I not trolling my child, trying to make her uncomfortable for no reason, I would not have found out that she's actually going through something at school. So it's an unintended triumph, but also now I have to figure out how to get her to a place where she feels comfortable opening up about these things without me having to badger her.
Yeah.
Or fool her. That's really interesting. I honestly have never even thought of that as like a accidental or on purpose parenting technique. And I'm very impressed with your very high stakes bluffing through that experience. Like, I think I would have cracked at some point, but you didn't. And you got like the good shit out of your kid. That's very impressive.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk some business before we move on to our listener questions. Jamila and I are coming to Miami for a live show on November 23rd. Mom and Dad Are Fighting Live comes to the Miami Book Fair. We'll be joined by Pamela Paul from the New York Times Book Review and the author of How to Raise a Reader, and Adam Monsbach, the author of the best-selling Go the Fuck to Sleep and Fuck Now There Are Two of You. We're going to have a lively discussion plus answer some questions. I think it'll be super fun. It is a free show, a free 4 o'clock in the afternoon show, so you can bring some kids. You can hire a babysitter and make a day of it, but we really want to meet all our Southeast Florida listeners. So come on by. 4 o'clock p.m., Saturday, November 23rd, Miami-Dade College, part of the Miami Book Fair. For tickets and information, go to slate.com/live.
And Dan and I are going to go to the club that night.
Oh, yes. We're going to the club.
Pack your heels.
The club.
Get on Fashion Nova, order a couple new dresses. We're going to go turn up.
So my understanding is that Jamila has invited all attendees to the club with us.
The club.
We're going to the club.
Yes, I believe.
I cannot
Drake
wait.
Is going to be there. Diddy's going to be hosting. It's going to be a situation.
I just hope I run into Dwayne Wade at the club. Also, while you're on Slate.com, going to Slate.com/live, go sign up for Slate's parenting newsletter. I write it every week. It is a little email that I write to now, I think, 4,500 of my closest friends. I also inform you about all the stuff we publish, all new Mom and Dad Are Fighting episodes and Care and Feeding columns and all our other parenting content. But also, usually I just tell a story or crack a joke or give you some other fun email to arrive in your inbox at 4 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. Sign up at slate.com/parenting email. And check us out on Facebook. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook. It is a really fun community where we all yell at Rebecca about her opinions.
Yeah.
It's completely delightful. Check it out.
And yell at each other about my opinions.
Oh, yeah. Just a lot of yelling about opinions. In Slate Plus today, we will be talking about a fantastic parenting fail, a fail that puts all our fails to shame, with our good friend Faith Smith, executive producer of Slate Live and occasional guest host of this very podcast. Here's a quick sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
So I asked, did Benjamin go to school today? And she responded that, no, he's on a break. He was not on a break.
To hear segments like that and to get ad-free podcasts, sign up for Slate Plus. That's Slate's membership program. It is a great way to support all that we do. For just $35 for your first year, you can help cover the cost of producing this show and your other favorite Slate podcasts. And of course, in return, you will get extended ad-free versions of Mom and Dad Are Fighting, plus other lesser shows, and a ton of other great benefits. So support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, support Slate, go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. Okay. Onward. We have two listener questions this week. This first question was emailed to us so it could be read by the one and only, the fabulous Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, I'm a mother in a two-parent house where we both work full-time gigs. We have a 3-year-old and an almost 1-year-old. To maintain a healthy lifestyle, my husband and I don't drink more than 3 nights per week. But it turns out the nights I do have a few beers make parenting not only more tolerable, but fun. For example, my 3-year-old wants to brush his own teeth. This irritates me, usually. But with drinks, I'm able to be present and enjoy the process. All of a sudden, what would have been a fight is now easy and fun. He wants another story. Guess who's got creativity waiting in the wings? Baby threw dinner on the floor? I empathize more than condemn. And I got time and patience to clean it up and give kisses. What makes a good modern parent? We hear we should be slow to anger, quick to listen, engaged in stories and creative time, less attuned to schedules and more attuned to our kids. Turns out, I'm much better at that after a few. And I can imagine many other parents feel the same way. For some listeners, this might be more pot than alcohol. So where do you all fall on the question of parental imbibing or smoking? Signed, Tense, wishing I was tipsy.
I have talked about this in the show many times. I fall on the I probably drink too much side of not just parenting, but just like life in general. You know, 3 times a week, it's good for you. That's not bad. I feel like a good week is if I don't have a glass of wine 2 of the 7 nights of the week. Mm-hmm. So that being said, kudos to you for being aware and for thinking about it and being thoughtful about it. But to me, this question is less about, you know, whether or not it's okay that sometimes you have beer and then interact with your kids than it is about what you are describing. Because what you are describing is actually kind of, I think, you're learning more about your capacity as a parent than you think you are. The problem here, I mean, it's obviously like I could get into questions of substance stuff. I could tell you like all of the sort of boilerplate stuff about like if you need a drink in order to be, you know, a calm and better person, perhaps you should look at the drinking. I'm just going to put that aside and leave that to the people who know more about that than I do. And I'm going to tell you this. What you're describing is your parenting style when you are more relaxed and when you are more present, and when you are not worried about the other things that are swirling around, which is sort of the effect that obviously alcohol has on you, you're describing being happier as a parent. So what I wonder is, are you thinking about ways that you can get there besides having a few drinks? Are you thinking about how the feedback loop of being sort of happy and having a good time with an interaction, say when your kid throws food on the floor and you're not super angry, but you're just like, oops, and then you clean it up and give him a kiss. That is like a feedback loop that you are expressing to me. I'm assuming you haven't been drinking before you wrote this email, but you're expressing it to us in your email that you feel good about that kind of parenting, that you feel like that's the way you'd rather be, that, you know, when you're not on edge, when you're not distracted, when you can be present, it's good. So you've kind of drawn the line there yourself, assuming that you don't have, you know, what some people would call like a true addiction where you like, you know, can't make it, you know, through the day without drinking or you can't function without using a substance. Assuming that's not what you're talking about, which I don't think it is, given your email, I would just look for ways to let that feedback loop itself inform your parenting in the future. Remind yourself on a daily basis of how much happier and easier and lighter and more fun the experience of parenting is, not when you've had 6 or 7 drinks, But when you are chilled out, when you feel like you can take a moment as it comes, when you have a situation where your kid wants to brush his teeth himself, and by the way, good for him, 3 years old and wants it himself, who cares if he's doing a terrible job? Like, it's amazing that he wants to. If you can figure out a way to just pretend that's how you feel in the moment, on the nights that you haven't been drinking, perhaps that feedback loop will be the reward that will make it stick, not the pleasure that you get from alcohol in those moments. Because it's not the alcohol that's giving you pleasure in the moment. It's the sense of feeling like I handled that better than I would have otherwise. So try to get there without it all the time, not some of the time. Don't do it as an experiment. Try to get there without it and let the feeling and the positive experience that results, which it will, come from that more laid back, relaxed, present kind of parenting. I think if you really try it and really dedicate yourself to getting there as many days as possible, you're probably going to find yourself relating less with drinks equals good parent versus when I chill the fuck out equals good parent. That's what I hear when I listen to you, and that's my advice for you.
I think that's like a perfect answer, Rebecca. Somehow, drinking brings this couple or this parent to a place where they can be the sort of parents that they would rather be, without the inhibitions, without the stress, without whatever is blocking them from being carefree enough to indulge in a silly session of messy toothbrushing with a three-year-old that would otherwise be annoying or stressful. And no, you don't want to be in a position where you have to have alcohol to get to that place. I agree that you should look for ways to identify what the stressors are, even if it's just checking in with yourself and saying, hey, why does it bother me so much that he wants to, you know, dip his fries in ketchup instead of letting me put them, you know, all over in a neater fashion? Why can't, you know, I just be free in this moment like I would be if I'd had a cocktail or two? In addition to doing that work, however, might I recommend marijuana? And letter writer, you make reference to it and you say, you know, some people may get this feeling that I get from a few drinks with pot. And as one of those people, I will say that being a conscientious cannabis user has enhanced the quality of my parenting in terms of, I think, the experience that I have in taking care of my child. And at times, the experience that my child has with me, it lessens my anxiety. It allows me to put some of my stressors to the side. I have to do the important work of making sure that I don't always have to use marijuana to be in the presence of my child, which I certainly do not. And also measuring just how much I'm using and how am I using it and what method of consumption am I looking to. And it's a science, you know, and everyone is different and it doesn't work well for everyone. And, you know, years ago when the first wave of pot moms who were largely, you know, upper middle class, white, suburban, and not the first wave of marijuana using mothers, of course, but women who were coming forward and, you know, being interviewed on talk shows or for magazines and saying, yes, you know, I may not look like the stereotypical marijuana user. And, you know, forget what you think about stoners. It has helped me to be a better parent. I, like, you know, a lot of other folks, laughed that off, you know, felt some resentment over this particular group of people being able to have the ability to talk about those things in public without concern that Child Protective Services would be at their homes the next day looking for them or that they would be pulled over for suspicion of having marijuana because of the way they looked and that they could just be free and happy with this thing. And it also sounded like some bullshit to me that it made them better parents. And then I had a kid. And so I deeply relate to this challenge that you're having. But again, I can't help but to stress how important it is that you listen to Rebecca's advice more so than mine. But you can consider mine too. But definitely listen to Rebecca's and figure out how you can get to this more euphoric feeling without having to look to that substance. And there's also, I mean, there's lavender oils and all the stuff that my parents would have encouraged me to try before looking to marijuana. You know, there are other herbs and things that you can use for stress. It could be having a cup of peppermint tea before the kids come home. It could be meditating. It could be yoga. But it sounds like there are some things that are going on in your life that are making it hard for you to do the most important job that you've ever signed up to have. And addressing them will certainly make your walk a lot easier. than looking to something outside of yourself to help you get through the day.
It is really fun to like joke about those t-shirts that people sell on Etsy that say Suburban Wine Mom, or to like talk about mommy juice and all that. But like this letter with its like sort of desperate clenched teeth, devil may care joyousness, read as much like a letter from an incipient alcoholic as I've ever seen. And I have no idea actually how dependent you are, letter writer, on the few beers, the few glasses of wine that you have 3 nights a week. But I, like Rebecca and like Jamila, I'm deeply uncomfortable with the idea that you must medicate yourself in order to be happy with your parenting. I think that that's a real warning sign. And I also think that that just raises a bunch of difficult scenarios inside your household when you have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, which are the exact ages when you frequently need to exercise really good judgment in dealing with them. You are in a 2-parent household. You said you mentioned your husband. Maybe one of you drinks and the other one doesn't, so someone's always sober. But like, I don't want to be totally alarmist, but like if each of you are 3 glasses deep into the night and there's like a real problem or a real emergency, it is tricky to handle those things with a baby and a 3-year-old when both of you are drunk. Like, that is hard. And while I have often been a big fan of the occasional parenting while drunk, I have found that the ways that it makes me freer and easier also coincide with the ways it makes me less reliable and more likely to do something that I later feel like, oh, that was slightly stupid. And those things often go hand in hand. And the more you start thinking about drinking as the key to your healthy parenting, even as tongue-in-cheek as you may be intended for this to be presented, I think the more likely you are to run into situations where the drinking doesn't actually help your parenting that much. It makes it a little bit harder while making you view yourself as slightly more fun, but that the ramifications afterwards get tougher and tougher as you go on. Which is all to say, Rebecca is right. On her final show, listen to Rebecca. Find other ways to give yourself this freeness and ease with yourself, with your environment, with your family, and with parenting. Then, when you are that person, the occasional night when one or both of you has a couple of drinks is like a fun departure from the norm, not the norm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just practice. This is the thing. The question I probably get the most often from people who write to me directly about this podcast is, how are you so chill with your kids? How do you not yell? How did you do that? How did you stop yelling? The answer is that I stopped. It was just as much of a practice as anything else. And it was fucking hard. I wanted to yell. Like, I wanted to fall back into the old pattern of being tense about things that I now realize in retrospect didn't matter. But the bottom line is, it is the practice that makes it work. Like, we expect our kids to learn things through positive reinforcement. We expect our dogs to learn things through positive reinforcement. But as parents, we're often just not willing to do that work and like reinforce ourselves positively for better parenting practices. And being more chill when a kid who's 3 drops something on the floor, like, that is a practice that's worth doing, because your kid's 3, but you still have 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 to live through. And you're not going to be done with the food on the floor, you know, bad teeth brushing stuff, like, anytime soon. So
yeah, and you need to be that mom every night, not the 3 nights you drink.
Or try to.
Yeah.
No one's perfect, for God's sakes.
But like, don't give up on the idea that the other days you could never be that mom.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for reaching out, letter writer. We hope this was helpful. Once again, if you have questions for us, please email us at momanddad@slate.com, and we'll do our best to answer them.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on to question number 2, read once again by Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, I have a 3-year-old and a 4-month-old, and we live near my parents. My 3-year-old has a close relationship with my parents, and they care for her a few hours a week. We usually spend some time together as a whole family once a week as well. They actually moved to be near me and my husband a couple years ago because my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. They are both in their 60s and pretty physically healthy. And my dad's disease is moving slowly, so they live independently with my mom as the main caregiver for my dad. As my daughter gets older and my dad declines, my husband and I are having trouble explaining the situation to her. For quite a while, they had the best relationship. In fact, we found that a healthy 3-year-old and a 65-year-old with Alzheimer's have similar senses of humor and joy in doing the same thing over and over again. But now my dad is not simply forgetful. He is overwhelmed by lots of noise and movement, has trouble following more than 2-step instructions, and processes decisions really slowly. What's more, he is totally enchanted by the baby. It seems to be therapeutic for him to sit with the sleeping baby on his lap, or to interact when the baby is calm and smiley. At other times, he loves running around the yard and being goofy with our daughter, but her general noise and movement level have been bothering him lately, so he'll try to avoid her. She is starting to act out around my dad, yelling at him and demanding that he do things, getting mad when he doesn't understand, and getting jealous of her little brother. Do you have any advice for explaining this to a kid too young to be logical about it? I'm worried about discussing his overall cognitive decline as well as his preference for the baby. I also haven't even broached the fact that we are all really sad about this. And my dad himself is sad about it sometimes because he has moments of recognizing his own confusion. Thank you.
This is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Thank you for writing to us. I wanted to start on this one because I really relate to this question because we've gone through it in 2 different ways and are still going through it. I think I've talked about this a little bit on the show before, but my father-in-law was diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia in 2015. And that same year, my dad was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. So we had 2 grandpas, about one on each side of the family, dealing with different kinds of dementia at different times. Both those guys were and are really fantastic grandpas with great relationships with their grandchildren. But the experience of talking to our kids about it was really different for each of them. My dad lives in Milwaukee. We only see him a couple of times a year, and his Alzheimer's has progressed really slowly. Even now, like 4 years after his diagnosis, he hasn't really undergone any of those very traditional personality changes. He's just like a forgetful version of himself. Otherwise, he's mostly unchanged. And so because of that, because of the relative slowness of the changes and because the girls don't see him that often, they understand what is up with him, but it doesn't really affect their interactions with him that dramatically or that regularly. But for Beeman, my father-in-law, it was very different. And it's this particular experience that makes me most relate to this question and makes me want to offer some advice. Beeman, who the grandkids called Sir, that was the grandpa name he chose. Kiki and Sir lived, it was great. When Ollie was pregnant with Lyra, she was just like, well, what do you want your grandpa name to be? And he goes, well, they can call me Sir. So that was what we did. But so Kiki and Sir lived near us for almost our kids' entire childhood. They lived in PG County. We saw them all the time, you know, probably once a week, once every 2 weeks at the least. He was super engaged, very active with them, very funny and loving. But his dementia changed his personality a lot very quickly. And within a year or so of his diagnosis, he, like your father, letter writer, he started not to be able to handle noise or busy activity very well. He started to get snappish and cranky and very easily upset. And this all went in tandem with a very rapid decline of his memory and with the onset of new obsessive behavior and a worse temper and many other issues. And it was really hard for all of us to see this happen to Alia's dad. And we all tried to help her mom however we could. But of course, one of the hardest parts was finding the language to talk to our kids about it. Now, our kids were older at that point than your 3-year-old. So we could use logic a little more. But I do think the real benefit that we had in talking to them are benefits that you can share. And the 2 things that we learned were be as clear as you possibly can in language that they understand and don't sugarcoat it. And 2, use the changes that they see to help them understand how it is that they can have a new and different relationship with this person who still loves them. So, you know, for these kids, it's for a 3-year-old, it's something like, Grandpa is sick. His sickness is in his brain, and it's changing the way that he looks at the world and the way that he behaves. And you can see that Grandpa seems confused sometimes. You can see that sometimes he doesn't want to run around with you the way that he used to. And that's not because of anything that you did. It's that the sickness in his brain makes it a lot harder for him to do those things with you. But he still can be very creative and fun with you, but just in quieter ways. He still loves you a lot. And so we want to find some quieter things that the two of you can do together, because those are easier for his brain. So you and Grandpa can draw together. You can look at photographs together. You can tell stories together or listen to music together. You can be silly and fun still, but please remember that he feels happiest when you two are having quiet time together. That's when he's happiest and when his brain makes him feel the happiest. You might find that there's different language that you end up using, but I think you ought to be clear that the change she's envisioning is not in her imagination. It's real. That the change will affect what her relationship can be, but also it does not mean that she can't interact with him anymore. It means that she needs to find ways to help him express his and her creativity together and do that in a different setting than maybe she's used to. And it will require saying this a bunch of times and reminding her a bunch of times. And it will require, as Rebecca has talked about already in this episode, the positive feedback loop of her sitting with him, having those quiet experiences and finding them rewarding in their own way for her. And the more that that happens, the more that she will buy into that. The competing with a baby thing is really tough for a three-year-old. And I'm very curious, Jamila and Rebecca, if you guys have advice on that specific front, because that's not something that we had to deal with at all.
You know, I would, I love everything that you said, Dan. And, you know, I would add specific to managing the difference in how Grandpa's interacting with the baby now versus the three-year-old, that, you know, the baby doesn't make a lot of noise typically. And when a baby does, usually they would be handing him or her off to the parent anyway, typically for a diaper change or something. But that Grandpa's very sensitive to noise. So, you know, like you said, there's a different way that you have to play with him now, and, you know, a different way to engage him that is still fun and filled with the love that you all have for one another. But, you know, you don't want Grandpa's ears to hurt. You know, you don't want to scare him. And, you know, this is just a different type of play. And so it's not that Grandpa likes the baby or loves the baby more than he does you. It's just that, you know, he's got this sensitivity to sound and to, you know, a lot of movement and running around that he didn't used to have. And so once we get this adjustment correct and you start to adapt to that, then it'll... you know, that you'll find that Grandpa will have a delightful afternoon with you and the baby, you know, in some ways like it was before things got tougher, in other ways different, but that it's still a special and important love and that you haven't done anything wrong. And if you accidentally get too excited and start jumping up and down or you scream and Grandpa gets startled, you know, that don't think that he's not going to care about you anymore, not going to love you anymore, that we're going to be angry at you. You know, we're going to be helping you to learn how to be the grandkid that Grandpa needs you to be right now. And this is a process and it's going to be hard for all of us. But, you know, I just wouldn't want the little person to internalize any sort of guilt or shame or fear that they, you know, are doing something wrong for behaving like a three-year-old.
What about you, Rebecca?
Yeah, no, I agree. Honestly, Dan, your answer there was one of the best answers to this question, a question like this that I've ever heard on this podcast. I really don't have anything of substance to add other than, you know, this is such a tremendous really opportunity also and something to think about. And it, again, worth making the investments to have these conversations with your young child over and over again. In terms of really developing a sense of empathy and understanding around the older people in their lives, you know, I didn't have the benefit of having these thoughtful conversations with my parents about the older people in my life when I was a kid. And as a result, with no information, I just found it really difficult to be around old people. Like, I've really had to learn how to be around old people. I really didn't, like, learn to be empathetic, enjoy the time, appreciate the time until I was, like, in my 20s. Because when I was a kid, it was just like, keep the kids away from the person who's sick. Keep the kids away. We don't want to set grandma off or whatever. And so I learned that it was something to be feared, that like I could do damage, that it was going to be inconvenient for the adults in my life to have me in the room. And I, you know, if I could go back in time and give my own parents advice, that would be a part of it, is help me have a better relationship with the older people in my life, because then I also would have a better model for helping my kids have a better relationship with the older people in their life. And it only good can come from everything you're talking about. I'm really sorry to hear about, you know, your parent, and it sounds like you're already really thoughtful, and I wish you the best of luck here.
Here's the other advice I'd give that isn't about your kids specifically, but is something that we all and our families have learned the hard way, which is, I want you, letter writer, to please take your mom to a support group for families of people with Alzheimer's. Get a babysitter for your kids. Get your husband to hang out with your dad for the day, and get her to that meeting, and you too, get you to that meeting. As your letter suggests, it can be really hard to find time and space with all the other things going on in our lives to be sad about what's happening and to think about it and talk about it. And it is really crucial for the next few years in your family's life, which are going to be difficult, that you give yourselves that chance. And you need to give your mom opportunities in support groups and outside in conversations with your family to talk frankly about the arrangement that she has caring for your father, the things that are working, the things that are difficult, in a judgment-free way, so that she doesn't worry about making you feel guilty or bad. But you need to make sure that she has an opportunity to be clear about that relationship and where it's going, so that you can be ready to step in and help find in-home help or residential care that can support her when she needs it. Don't wait to do that until their life together becomes too hard for them to bear, because then you are setting yourself up for months and months of very, very like torturous times as you try and solve these problems once they've reached crisis mode. The reason I suggest a support group is because it can be really beneficial, but also it's an easy place for her to hear other people talk about their experiences with caregiving, and for her to start thinking about her own experience and start talking about it, because those are things that you're going to have to face at some point, and you don't want to face them when the shit has hit the fan. Thank you for writing in. We'll really be thinking of you, and good luck and all our love to you guys and your family. Once again, that letter was emailed to momanddad@slate.com. Please send us questions. We'd love to talk to you about them. We'd love to hear from our listeners about what you want the show to be about. momanddad@slate.com. All right, let's do some recommendations. I will start with recommendations. I am recommending the Nintendo Switch. I'm recommending buying the Nintendo Switch.
It's the best.
It's so good. I'm recommending buying it so your kids can play games together. Particularly, I'm recommending the game The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Particularly, I'm recommending helping your daughter as she plays it and helping her work her way through the puzzles. But then, after she goes to bed, just playing it yourself for a little while and getting like way ahead of her in the game and just thinking, well, it's great that I'm ahead of her in the game, so I'll be able to help her with all these different tasks and quests when the time comes. And then I'm recommending just even playing it a lot more, like getting way, way ahead of her in the game, just so far ahead of her in the game, and getting super into the game and reading websites about how to succeed at different tasks in the game. Then I'm recommending taking your children's Nintendo Switch with you when you fly across country for a week, because there's actually no better invention for enjoying a cross-country flight than a Nintendo Switch. And then I guess I'm recommending letting your kids play it if there's any time.
Ah. I love the Nintendo Switch. Honestly, like, it is the best like form factor of any gaming device any of my kids have ever had. Like, the cool part is you can hook it up to your TV and everyone can play Mario Kart together, like on your living room TV, without you having to have like, we have a whole separate TV set up for gaming with our Xbox and stuff, because we like have a basement. But I have to say, bringing the Nintendo Switch into the living room, doing like family Mario Kart on the regular TV, it's so freaking fun. It's the best. It's the best. If you're hesitating, just get it. He's right. Just get it.
Yeah, just get it. Jamila, what do you recommend this week?
So my daughter and I recently started taking a self-defense class together. And It's great. I mean, we've only went once, but I'm really excited about it. And I really, one, I feel like it's necessary. And two, I was surprised at how excited my daughter was about doing it. My parents attempted to put me in Taekwondo at the local JCC when I was maybe six. And I vaguely recall just sitting on the floor every week and just refusing to participate until the instructor finally said, please let her go. She doesn't want to be doing this. But my kid's all in and she keeps saying, try me, try me. And I, you know, I think it's important that, you know, all children are prepared to defend themselves in some way. And girls we know are particularly vulnerable in certain ways. So with the clear instruction that what we're learning here is only to be deployed in an absolute emergency, I would recommend getting your little ones, particularly your girls, but really all of your kids, into some sort of self-defense training. And I would love to tell you where we're taking the class because it's free and it's great. But then I may have to defend myself against some people who may show up. So if you know me in real life, hit my line and I'll tell you where it is. Otherwise, no.
That's a great recommendation. I love that. Rebecca, your final chance to recommend things to our listeners as a regular host.
And it's a super weird one. You ready?
Ready.
So I'm really glad that you just went with that self-defense thing because I did something even crazier yesterday. I asked my husband for my birthday, which was last week, if he would take me to a shooting range. And last night, I spent an hour with an instructor and on a range firing a Glock G17 pistol at a man-shaped outline target. And I did this for a couple of reasons. One is I've never handled a gun before. There was no hunting where I grew up, and there was no, safe, responsible gun ownership. Pretty much the gun culture I was surrounded with as a kid made me just very afraid of the idea of guns. I've now lived in New Hampshire for 27 years, and I am surrounded by lots of, liberal gun owners. Like, it's always been, weird to me, the idea of, the whole gun culture conversation and debate around it. I think that very often what gets missed is this, huge, wide swath of America, which are, you know, relatively normal people who also happen to be gun owners. But anyway, that's pretty much who I live with. I have no interest in being a gun owner. I don't want to have a gun in my house for a variety of reasons. However, between kind of deciding that, as a journalist who very often helps other reporters report gun stories using data and sort of anecdotal stuff, interviews with people, as parent of kids, one of whom just is interested in guns just as mechanical objects and all that stuff, my ignorance has not helped in any of those aspects of my life, just in terms of having had no experience ever having, had a gun in my hand. Plus, I also have this weird reflexive fear situation going on right now with all of California being on fire, apparently, which, by the way, any listeners out there who are in or near the fire zone, I can't stop thinking about you, all of you, not just listeners, but other people who live in or near the fire zones. I know it's terrifying.
Or co-hosts.
Yes, and co-hosts.
Everything okay? Sorry,
I live in California, Rebecca.
Yes, I know you do. I know you do. I mean, I had one of my podcast listeners send me a video. They were looking for, I had to hook one listener up with another listener so they could go somewhere with their dog. It's incredibly scary. The sort of, signs of potential democratic unraveling happening in our country. I'm mostly thinking about the zombie apocalypse right now. And I have that sort of thread of uncertainty that everyone has. And like I said, no interest in becoming a gun owner, but for some reason I felt like holding one in my hand and firing it. And we did that last night. And all the weirdness of it aside, all that stuff, it was so freaking fun. It was really fun. Not in a way that I want to go again today and do it again, but that to do something that is so deeply outside of your comfort zone once in a while, to face a huge fear that you have with somebody that you trust and to do it in a safe and regulated environment where it feels like it's okay to be a beginner, that kind of experience can just feel really empowering, really freeing, whether it's, shooting targets or doing something completely different that has nothing to do with firearms. And I realized doing this last night, it's just been a really long time since I tried something new. So yes, while I'm recommending going shooting in a safe and regulated environment, if it's something you want to try, what I'm really recommending is pick a thing that you are either afraid of or are curious about or know you need to know more about to just be a more informed person, or that you just always wanted to try, and just do it. Because honestly, I'm super psyched it all day. It's really been like refreshing to my mood and my general outlook on life. And it's less about firing the gun than it is about having put myself out there and tried something. So that's my recommendation. Go shoot a
for
clock.
For me, that no, thing kidding. Was for me, that thing was buying a Nintendo Switch and playing it all the time. That was a fascinating recommendation. I'm very intrigued by that. I have very little experience with guns. I mean, I haven't fired one since YMCA Camp Minnecani in like 1987 or something. And I'm so interested as to whether I would find that like a good experience or an awful one. I truly don't know, which is maybe one recommendation for trying it.
Yeah, I didn't know either. I was like, I'm either going to walk out after 5 minutes or I'm going to end up being super competitive and like super into it. And it was the latter, of course, because I'm just super competitive. But yeah, no, it was exactly the same. I was very open to the idea that I would hate it. And I asked Kevin in advance, like, if I want to leave, can we just leave? And he was like, yeah. And so going into it, knowing I had that safety valve also really, really helped.
That was great. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. Farewell. Rebecca Lavoie.
Oh, thanks.
If you have a question you'd like to ask us on the air, leave us a message at 424-255-7833. Or, of course, email us at momanddad@slate.com so Shasha can read your question. Plus, join us on Facebook. Search for Slate Parenting. You can also post questions there. We often see them there and might borrow them for the show. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Jamila Lemieux and Rebecca Lavoie, I'm Dan Coyce. Thanks for listening.